I was in the basement of the Aria Hotel in Vegas with my friend Craig. And on the finish, it would have this like super rich, overripe, almost rotting fruit. That's when I started curating for the Daily Pint. But I just try to draw from everything that I come across. Well, I'm about to drop some sage advice on everybody. So stay, don't click the exit button yet.
All right. Well, here we go, Mr. Chris Udy. This is the very first episode of this podcast video series where I'm going to be interviewing people in the whiskey industry. And I am super excited to have, like I said, Chris Udy, a friend of mine for quite a while. He is the vice president over at Impex Beverages, and he is the whiskey redhead. And the way this format works is I already sent Chris 13 questions. He answered them, and we're going to go through them. I'm going to add some follow-up questions for him. And his written answers for those 13 questions will be posted on the website, so you can actually see what he wrote. But first, how you doing?
I'm well. So I don't know how this is. People can see me the whole time, or are they just seeing you, and then when I talk, they see me. They see me the whole time?
Both should be. This is the first one, so I guess we're gonna find out when I download the recording after how this works. But we ideally we're gonna both be on camera.
Well, let me just apologize, everyone, because I ain't pretty. But if you cover one eye, then you just see Joshua, and you're good.
I'm already blind in that eye, so I'll just do that, and I won't see anything.
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm super excited for this. There's a lot of stuff in here that, you know, I want to talk to you about as we go through it. But before we get going, what are you drinking tonight?
Oh, so I'm drinking, this is a Filey Bay Muscatel. It's a little mini. So we just picked up Spirit of Yorkshire Distillery, and they're going to be coming in next month. And so I'm just getting to know the whiskey better. That way I can sell it well.
Nice.
It's good. Well, it's a Jim Swan project, just like Pendaren and the.
Oh, it's another one. Okay.
Yeah, we tend to have a thing for Jim Swan projects. For
sure. Yeah, Kilhoman, Amroot. Yeah, you do. So, I've got a little. Well, I guess Amroot. Amroot wasn't a Jim Swan project. No, that was.
And that's more of on the JVS side, but you know we do like Gowan and Carolus, Spirit of Yorkshire, M&H,
Pendaren,
Kilhoman. Who else am I forgetting? I can't worry about it now. I'm drinking. We're having fun.
Yeah. Well, I'm drinking something that's I think is a little special for me. Maybe it's special for you.
Yes, very special for me.
That original K&L cask.
Oh, wow.
The first one.
Yeah, I can't. Your screen's a little pixelated. What cask number was it?
282.
Yeah, that was a good one. I think that was like 9 or 10 year old whiskey in that bottle.
Yeah. One of 446 bottles. So, yeah, here we go. So, it's a little pixelated, but let's hope that it all comes together in the end.
It will, but you should just pixelate me again, because then, then it's going to just be prettier. I look like a video game.
There we go. An old 8-bit video game.
Showing my age.
All right. Let's get to the questions. So, the first question I have for you that I sent you, Mr. Udy, is what is the most memorable drink you've ever had?
So, you know, by the way, before me or anybody else answers any one of these questions in the long series that is going to be your podcast, let me just tell you that is an impossible question to answer, right? Like there's a million of those. And,
I mean, true.
And you try to say the most memorable one, which, you know, I'll give you, but at the same time, it's a tough one to say that was it.
I know a lot of these questions are tough, but that's I want to the idea is to unravel the layers that is Chris Udy, that are Chris Udy.
All right. So what I put for that answer was I was in the basement of the Aria Hotel in Vegas with my friend Craig, and the beverage director, the head beverage director, Craig's boss at the time, he poured me a whiskey blind, and because Craig was kind of hyping me up, saying this guy knows a lot more about whiskey than I expected. He's a super cool guy, and so we were just downstairs having a few. And so he pours me one blind, and he goes, "Well, what is this?" And I nosed it and tasted it, and I was like, "Well, that's very old Macallan." And he couldn't believe it, because he was like, "Yeah, that's 60-year-old Lalique." And I said, cool. I never had 60-year-old Lalique.
Just cool. That's no big deal. Yeah, whatever.
Well, what it was 79 and before, Macallan had a very particular flavor profile to it. It kind of had this like overripe, trashy, like bananas in a dumpster. Like it's not a bad thing, by the way. It's like incredibly awesome to experience. And on the finish, it would have this like super rich, overripe, almost rotting fruit on the back end. And it's kind of what made Macallan so awesome for that time period. And I had had a bunch of bottles from the 70s and I think late 60s of Macallan, and they all had that signature profile. So when I tasted it on that one, it was just kind of like a dead giveaway, right? It's like tasting Pendaren and you get that super rich apricot on the finish. You immediately know it's Pendaren. Well, that whiskey had it on it. So I figured, you know, why not? I mean, I'm in a fancy place. It's a pretty good guess. And I nailed
pretty
it.
Pretty good chance.
Haven't done it
well,
since.
I remember trying one of those. Well, I remember trying one of those, a 74 Mac 25 at Laws one time. And that thing was...
Same.
Yeah. Same trashy, but beautiful whiskey. Like that was by far whiskey of the night. And we just, we had to hide the bottle so we didn't kill it in one sitting because it was so good. It was so crazy and weird.
Yeah. But, that's a very memorable one, right?
It is a very memorable drink. That's not a shy way to start. I mean, you're the first guest and you're talking about Mac 60. So, you know, where are we going to go from there? But, and I guess that right there, though, that whole idea of, you know, you're able to identify the whiskey and in there, that kind of moves into the next question, which, since I already know the answers, we can... They kind of go well together, but what's the most transformative moment in your career?
So that one, there is no single answer because, you know, people who are going to follow me on here probably have much better answers. But there was a few. Nah. I've had a bunch of defining moments in my career. The one that I put in the thing was when I started curating for the Daily Pint, because the Daily Pint started winning awards, and that added legitimacy to what I thought I knew about whiskey. So it kind of lent. Phil, when he let me do that, and it started gaining the accolades even more. So it already had accolades, but it started gaining even more than it already had. That really helped to change my career because, again, it just made people believe what Phil had already kind of recognized and what I felt I knew about whiskey when he was like, just go bananas and buy whatever you want that you think is going to be super cool. And we did it. And it was great. But that would be one of three main ones, to be honest. Like that's the first main one, but I don't think it's right to just speak about that one. If I can talk about the other two, would be,
oh, please do.
When I got into the industry, you know, I'd been in the booze industry since the day I turned 21. I worked at bars first as a doorman and then as a very, very terrible bartender. But when I was 30 and I was trying to figure out where I was going to go, because I was living in Athens and I had a couch in LA and I had a couch in New York. And I'd never been to LA. My buddy Scotland, who worked at Vendome in Toluca Lake, he couldn't get off work that day. And I love my friends, as you know. And so I stayed around and helped him move boxes. And my now business partner, Sam Filmus, came in to sell Scotland whiskey. He was going around selling Signatory back then. And because I was friends with Scotland, they let me try everything as well. And it was just completely eye-opening because I had always just had whiskey as a means to an end, right? Like it was a quick way to get kind of hammered and go about your night having a good time drinking yellow beer and, you know, messing around. But tasting an entire flight of different, very well curated single cast, single malts where each one tasted completely different. It was just this big eye-opening experience. So that would have, of course, been transformed because it literally transformed me from being what I was into moving to LA and starting to work in the whiskey industry. And then so that was huge as well. And then the third one would be when I took over, when I took ownership shares in Impex Beverages in January 2018. It was a very scary, you know what? There's four, actually. There's one before that. It's in 2016. Wait, how many years ago? 7 years. 2014 when Sam let me partner with him on the Whiskeys from Japan project using the Koji fermentation process. And when he let me partner with him, when you let me partner with him on that, that was the other one, because then that led to me eventually joining him in Impex as an owner in 2018, which is now, you know, it's now what I do, and I love it, and it's great. So there's been four, I guess. 2007, when I first tried whiskey, like really good whiskey, in a non-boozy nightlife setting. Two would be starting to work with Phil at the Daily Pint, where it gave legitimacy to what I thought I knew about what I was learning about whiskey. Three, starting the Koji Whiskey or the Rice Whiskey projects. And then four, finally taking ownership in Impex Beverages. And five will be when, you know, my liver gives out and they put me in the ground.
It'll happen to all of us. Yeah. Those are great. And if anyone watching or listening lives in Los Angeles, Santa Monica area, go in and look at the wall of whiskey inside of Daily Pint. And it's incredible. When I first moved to LA, I got a job working at an advertising agency. It was about a 10-minute drive from the Daily Pint. It was the place that we went every Friday after work. That was our, you know, pub after work. And I remember going in there so many times and looking at just the whiskey menu, but also the whiskey wall. And I was just always in awe of just everything in there and like what I could try. And then a couple of years later, about a year later, after my first time there, is when I met you at the second SCWC meeting. And because I didn't make it to the first one, it was the second one. And then it was like years later, I found out that you were the one that curated that. And it was kind of a weird way for everything to kind of come together. So,
you know, it's funny because you and I were probably in there at the same time having pints and not knowing each other when all that was going down.
Probably, because we were there every Friday, basically. Almost every Friday, we were in there having drinks and after work.
What's cool about that place is Phil is really someone who can kind of bring people together. And he's also someone who can kind of get the best out of you, as well as like, he's kind of an enabler, right? So like, I've seen him yell at people, come in their suits. He's like, hey, loosen that tie. Like, you're not working anymore. But when we were buying the bottles for that, I remember it was like, I was ordering Port Ellens and I was getting timid, because I was like, you know, these are $400-$500 a bottle. I think it's it, but you know, we've got like five or six. And he's like, well, go get another six. And so it turned from six to 12. So we had 12 different Port Ellens at one time. So it was a...
Wow.
Yeah. It's a magical place.
It is a magical place. And speaking of magic, I want to know a little bit about Mr. Yudi's artistic side. Like, do you have a favorite artist, writer, painter, pottery maker, lithograph maker, whatever? I want to know, what do you... Is there something in that area of arts that you draw to or take inspiration from?
So, you know, in my written answer, I write that I just try to draw from everything that I come across and try to make it part of me and move on. And that's true. But I've given that question some more thought since you originally sent it to me. And I don't have a better answer now. But I can tell you that, you know, I've been a longtime fan of The Who. Like, music would be my thing. Like, visually, I'm a little bit... I'm not quite there. I don't see things as detailed as everyone else does. So I miss a lot of things there. Every now and again, I'll see a piece of art that I think is just amazing, but I won't even be able to retain what it is. And reading's kind of difficult for me as well. So it's just not that is not thing. But from hearing, that's where I kind of find my way around in the world. And so I've always been a huge fan of The Who, like ever since I can remember. And then the Pixies as well. And then outside of that, it's just kind of all over the place. Like, you know, big time names like James Brown has always been like something I keep going back to. I listen to a lot more ZZ Top than I used to now. Like this week, but it changes every week. And this week I'm listening to a guy named Haruomi Hosono, which is a guy who does like electro pop, jazz, fusion, funk in Japan, but he did it in English and in Japanese. And I'll send you some tracks later that he's doing, but he's,
yeah, do.
It was just introduced to me by a buddy that I play soccer with. And so for the last week, I've been going around in my head singing, "Choo-choo, gatto goto." And it's like, it's crazy. Cause he did one album that's kind of funky. And then he did another one that's, It's almost like David Lynch. It's like Twin Peaks meets Cirque du Soleil. And that was in 96, and that's in English. So it always changes, man. It's not, I don't think I have the intelligence to really understand what a single artist does. So I just let all of it wash over me and then just walk away. And hopefully I'm a little bit more enlightened from it, if that makes sense. I enjoy it, but I don't.
That makes perfect sense. It's a great answer. It's a fair answer. And the visuals on here are not from you. It's our good friend, Michael Reese, who's made these. So, you know, you see the labels on Oishi and Fukano. That's Michael Reese.
Yeah. Reese did all the Oishi stuff, and it's beautiful. And it, like,
yeah.
And the Fukano boxes are just stunning. And that's, again, just like, hey, Reese, I need a box. And he goes, okay. And 24 hours later you have it. And you're just like, great.
Yeah. And I love when he sends me the proofs, and he's like, hey, take a look at this. What do you think of this? And then I get to see like what's coming down. And then I also get to see where my money is going to end up going over the next couple months.
All right.
I see what's coming.
I remember drinking with him one night at the house. We had done the first run of Oishi, and he was like, you know, I'm not quite satisfied with it. I think we need to increase the size of the label. And I was like, there ain't nothing wrong with this label. We had paid for the stamp already. So you got to pay for the mold that cuts the paper, right? And me being at the time, like barely scraping rent together, I was like, no, man, it's fine. It's fine. He's like, no, it needs to be increased. The general size of it needs to be increased. And he just would not let it go. And sure enough, luckily he is persistent enough to make me listen even when I'm not listening, even though I should be. And he was right. Like the next batch came out and it just looked so much better. And all we did was make the label just a little bit bigger. And I was like, well, there you go, son of a bitch.
Listen to your designer. Listen to your designer.
Yep.
Oh, man. Well, in that same vein and in that same line of, you know, the arts, do you have a favorite book or movie? Is there something in that area that maybe speaks to you?
I don't know, The Far Side by Gary Larson. I'm telling you, reading is really not, I struggle with emails. Like it's known within the company that like I am a black hole of emails. So if you send me something, it takes me forever to get back to you. And it's because I'll have to read it 75 times to make sure I got it right. And all my emails that I send out have misspelled words in them. I really struggle with that. On the movie side of things, let's see. There's been a bunch of those as well. Did I put anything like?
You put Spirited Away
by Hayao Miyazaki. Yeah, so that's a great one.
Yeah,
I like that. There's another really good movie called City of Lost Children. It's a French film that's kind of surreal,
with Ron Perlman in it.
Yeah, I like that movie quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a great movie. That is it's a very surreal. It's almost like it has a very Terry Gilliam like feel to it, like Brazil and all that. Like it's got that.
I don't know who that is, but if you see him, ask him where my $20 is. But yeah, so I guess I dig that type of stuff. But again, now I need to go check out Terry Gilliam, clearly, because if it's in that vein, it's going to be cool. But you can see with the Hayao Miyazaki stuff, it's a little bit surreal in the way that it's done. It's like it's complete fiction. It's not based upon any type of current state of reality whatsoever. It's almost fairy tale-esque, and I think that's the same that I like with City of Lost Children. And I'm trying to think of a couple other movies now that's in that vein that I really dig, which I can't, of course, think about because, you know, it just doesn't work that way. But that style of movie making is really cool.
Do you know Monty Python, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Terry Gilliam was in Monty Python, and then when they kind of broke up, he went and started doing more like creative surreal. He also did a lot of the directing and things of their movies that they did, like, you know, that whole beginning scene, I think it was Life of Brian, mm-hmm. where it's the accounting firms that are like attacking each other.
Yeah.
Like that was one of his concepts, and like him directing. Believe Yeah, I'm not as big a film buff as my buddy Irwan, so I might be a little wrong on it. But he did a ton of their of like just a lot of the stuff with Monty Python from the film side, as well as the writing and acting.
Yeah, man. So those guys are clearly brilliant too.
Yeah,
I mean, It's so timeless, right? Because you still find yourself quoting lines from those movies
in random
places, and it's how many 40 something years later, pushing 50, I guess.
Yeah, I love them. I do. I love Life of Brian and the whole everything. Yeah. Though I never saw the musical, the Camelot musical.
But you know, my favorite quotes are, I guess it's the Holy Grail when someone offers you something, you're just like, no thanks, I already got one. It's just like, we're looking for the Holy Grail. No thanks, I already got one. Wait, like I told him.
That's a good one. Yeah, everything about it is just it's a timeless piece of art.
Oh my goodness.
I would throw it under art.
You know, you got me feeling like I've got no depth to my being. Well, I am a redhead, so I don't have to have soul, do I? I'm like, it's known that we're soulless beings, so I guess I pass.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're a daywalker. It's okay.
Yep. I do need SPF 30 though. Now.
I wear SPF 15 just when I get up in the morning. The Irish in me burns to a crisp in a heartbeat. But
next ice age though, we're gonna take back over.
Yeah, then we'll be just fine. But hopefully before we get to the ice age, we can get to the next question, which is what's the accomplishment you're most proud of?
Oh man,
I'm gonna work on these transitions. I'm gonna find better ways. This is the first one. I said this is gonna be a little rough.
This is fine. I just don't know like what the timeline is, and
there's no timeline. Okay. This is a conversation. People will either enjoy it or they won't. We'll find out once it goes live.
Well, I'm about to drop some sage advice on everybody. So stay, don't click the exit button yet. So what I'm most proud of is the life I've built here in LA. Like all my friends, I love all my friends, and my family is like, you know, everyone, like I love my family. My life is great. My kid is awesome. My wife is awesome. My work is very fulfilling in multiple ways. Like it's pretty cool. The people I work with are all super unique and fun. And it's like, I don't know if that counts as an accomplishment, because I'm just kind of part of it and not necessarily something that I designed, but it's,
I would absolutely say it's an accomplishment. You had to meet the people, and then you had to recognize that they were people you wanted in your life. You had to pull them in. You had to take the chance with your wife and, you know, asking her to marry you and you the decision to have a kid. I mean, I absolutely think it's an accomplishment. It's a series of a lot of accomplishments, but it's a big one. And it's having a fulfilling life is a thing a lot of people struggle with. So I absolutely think that's valid.
Well, I would just tell them that, just remember I was 30 years old on a couch 14 years ago, no home. I mean, I wasn't technically homeless, but I was couch surfing for 3 months. I had $180 and I had like 15,000 in student loans I had to deal with. I had $180 period. That was it. And I had a bunch of credit card debt. And I said,
oh, wow. And now look at you.
Here we come. Yeah, now look at me. I got a lot more debt.
But you got a house, you got a kid, and a company.
And I got $185.
At $185 and a bunch of whiskey.
You got a lot of bottles of whiskey, that's right.
Yeah, so see? Progress, man. Progress. It's all about perspective. The good progress.
Yeah, it is. But it's bananas when you think about it. I was talking to a buddy of mine in Georgia today about it, and he was kind of chuckling because he knew me when I was in my 20s and getting absolutely nothing done every day. Nothing done every day. And we were just kind of joking about how we've finally transitioned into being an adult and how it still blows. But it is an interesting ride.
I constantly don't still think I'm an adult.
I know, man.
I keep wondering what that day is. I'm going to wake up and be like, I'm an adult. It just hasn't hit yet.
You just take off to the woods and build your own little Shangri-La out there.
I did. It's awesome. I love it up here in the woods. It's, I don't like the snow that we just got. I hate the snow, but
did you get snow?
Luckily, yeah, we got 4 inches the other day. Oh, so
wow. You got chains for your car?
I got a Subaru. I don't need chains.
I don't know how it works, man. I got like, we where I'm from, you see an inch of snow and everything shuts down. And then in California, like it doesn't even, you know, well, you're in California too, but in LA, nothing even freezes. Like the other day I went to go play a soccer game there was frost on the ground and it had been so long since I seen it. I was like a kid crunching it. Like,
that's amazing.
The team was looking at me like, what are you doing? I'm like, man, guys, this is rare occurrence. But they were from the UK, so they were just like, this is a normal Wednesday.
I could see that. I can see you out there doing that. But going back to your couch surfing days, if you had to give up your current career and you had the resources and time to start over pursuing any career you wanted, what would you do?
That was a good transition. That was a great transition.
We're getting better. So one question at a time.
So I've thought about this and I always thought it would be fun to one project that I would, if I had all the money in the world, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be hands-on to run it, but it would be something I'd look into opening like food that certain regions take for granted that doesn't exist in other regions. So like a street taco truck in the south of Japan would just be awesome, right? If you could do, and then like a proper burger joint, like a, this proper is relative to whatever you want it to be, but like a flat top burger joint that's actually got, you know, all the fixings like you would expect to get here, do one of those over there would be great. Or like in LA, you've got to go to certain areas of Southern California to be able to get bento boxes. I would like to see about expanding that out in other parts of the United States where they've just never even seen a bento box before, where you can do like an $8 lunch. And I think that would be kind of a cool gig to do.
That would be kind of cool. Kind of bringing new food experiences to places that for people to try and experience.
I mean, like
the food of a different culture.
I can promise you that the Japanese would geek out about pupusas. Do a Salvadorian place. You know, if people in Georgia would geek out about it. They've never seen them either. Like, it's just one of those things.
Well, there you go. You just have got to make a Salvadorian friend and take him to Georgia. And there you go.
And I got to hit the lottery so that if it fails, I don't screw over my friend. We're all good.
Yeah, you'll figure it out. But just put yourself back into the mindset of sitting on a couch. How are you going to start a food business sitting on a couch?
That's right.
You did it once. You can do it again.
Oh man, it really would be cool and fun. Like to just, I have to imagine that it would work. And the reason why I think that it would work is, like, if you look at the way that gourmet coffee has kind of taken over the world. Like you go to like every country has got a place that makes an awesome cappuccino, right? Like just or a flat white or whatever they're gonna do with it, and I just think that would translate out into cuisine as well, and especially with street food, because street food's delicious. Like my buddy once was poking at me saying the staples of third world countries are your favorite cuisine, and he's dead on, right? Like they absolutely are, because there's so many calories in it the way they're designed, right? So it just tastes so good, and I think that
they've survived for. There's a reason that street food in most areas has survived for decades, if not centuries. And it's because it's either very simple or very flavorful or both. And so there's a reason that things like that have just worked.
Yeah. I mean, it would. So. Plus, I'm not going to lie, Burbank needs an onigiri place desperately.
I don't even know what that is.
Onigiri's, it's a rice ball. So you take like if you go to a 7-Eleven in Japan, it's like this triangle rice ball with seaweed wrapped around it. And there's different levels of it. They have these ones that are processed by machines that are just kind of filling and cheap. And then they have these handmade ones that are really big. If you go to Hawaii, you got places that sell them. And in LA,
spam musubi.
Exactly.
So minus spam musubi. Yeah.
Or you just put the spam on the inside, or you put a different type of meat or a different type of vegetable on the inside. That's onigiri. But you can't get onigiri in Burbank.
The one time I went to Hawaii, the very first day there, I went to the 7-Eleven. It was right next to our hotel. And there was in the 7-Eleven, it was a spam musubi. And I was looking at this thing like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. I was blown away by it. And so I bought one, tried it. I was like, okay, this isn't bad, but if this is 7-Eleven quality. And then I became obsessed, and everywhere we went, the whole like 8 days that we were there, everywhere that had spam musubi on the menu, I tried it because I wanted to know, like, how does this one taste? And like, oh man, there's a lot more vinegar in their rice when they did this one. And that works really well with the spam, like the fattiness of the spam. And so like, I just started geeking out and like, where's the best spam musubi I could find as we were going around Hawaii?
Yeah, you spam musubi in a can of beer. You got an izakaya in your hotel room. It's perfect.
It was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah.
Oh. Speaking of travel, we still have a Japan trip. But before we get to that.
It's all shut down, right? Like it's.
I know. Everything is. Yeah, I know. We'll have to talk about that because I still got the credits sitting in my Delta account from our Japan trip that got canceled. So. They're still sitting there.
Hey, there you are.
They keep telling me.
We can see you now. You know, before we move, I know in my written answer I put a Philly cheesesteak. I don't know if I ever told you the story. I did that once in Japan. I actually made a Philly cheesesteak for my father.
No, I want to hear about your Philly cheesesteak, and then I'm going to ask you about your hobbies. So
basically, to make a long story short, if you try to buy the raw ingredients and make a Philly cheesesteak in Japan, each one's going to cost you about $20. Oh, hey, buddy.
Kaito.
That's right. I'm talking to your Uncle Josh. Say hi.
But I thought you were talking to someone that went to our house, Papa.
No, you're supposed to be in bed. I'm talking to my computer.
I heard that.
Kaito.
Yeah, he's getting big.
He is getting big. It's crazy not seeing him for so many years. Yeah. Or just seeing him like so briefly for a tiny bit during this whole thing.
He's negotiating now quite a bit for candies. He's pretty good at it.
Oh, there you go. I wonder where he got that from.
Apple doesn't fall far, let me tell you.
Besides taking care of your kid, though, what other hobbies do you have? Because everybody has something outside of everything, but do you have any hobbies, obsessions, collections, anything that extends beyond the booze world? Because I can pretty much guarantee everybody that's going to be on the show has extensive booze collections. So that's just doesn't even get counted at all.
So I love playing soccer. I'm not a great soccer player, but I love it. I played from the time I was 5 till I was 18. And then I took 20 years off. Because I was just in a different stage of my life, playing rock and roll and boozing it up and just being in what I was. But now I found it again, and I've been playing for the last 7 years, and I will play as much as I can any day of the week, as often as the family will let me go play. So it is the thing that I like to do. I'm still not very good. I learn a new thing about it every day, but things hurt that didn't used to hurt, and I can't get the ball as far as I used to, but it brings me a type of joy that I don't experience in anything else. When I'm done playing soccer, when I'm at the end of a soccer game, I average like, I don't know, right around 5-6 miles, depending on like how the game's being played or where I am on the pitch. And I feel better than, you just can't describe, it's hard to describe, like the endorphins are all kicked in, the beer tastes better, everything's great. It's all roses.
That's amazing. I mean, you need stuff like that in your life. So otherwise, things get monotonous, and it's good to have that extra thing that isn't related to what you do for work or anything else to just both like separate you, but really help you ground yourself. So that's amazing that you found something like that. That's always super important.
Yeah, I also think it helps your I think it kind of helps your mind to defragment a little bit, right? Like if you're focused on if you have a work problem that's bugging you, you know, sometimes you're working out in your sleep, but also if you have work problems that bug you, if you go and you do something that is just completely non-related, that is purely enjoyable, your subconscious will work out the solution while you're doing it. And so it just kind of like, you know, they say you got to just set things down sometimes. I'm sure you see that in your writing, like when you're, cause you know, you're great at writing stuff. When you hit a, a dead end with the pen, just set it down and go get distracted with something else. And then you come back and the words just start flowing again.
I usually, what I do is when I hit that point, I'll just keep pushing and I'll just acknowledge that what I'm writing is utter garbage. And I know that when I come back, I'm going to hate everything that I read, or everything that I wrote, but you're right. When I leave and I go do something else, go take the dog for a walk, go work out, go do something, come back to the next day, I'll read what I wrote. I'm like, wow, this is really trash. And then I immediately go, this is how I could write it way better. And then it's a lot easier to flow when that happens.
Do you ever tell yourself, man, this really reads like an email from Chris Udy? I got to just throw it
all the time. That's when I know my brain has turned to mush. I'm like, this is a Udy email. What's going on?
I mean, I used the word hornswoggle in a sentence on this page. It can't be good.
I do like using words like hornswoggle. It is fun to throw those in. But heading down that same direction of, you know, things that are not in your work, what does your typical Friday night look like? We're doing this on a Thursday, so you can't say it looks like this. So what are your typical Friday night look like in the Udy household?
It does look a lot like this because I'm in the Udy household.
So it looks just like this, except for maybe Kaito is actually, you know, awake longer.
Yeah, no, he would still be in bed. So Friday, off, I would be getting ready to go to bed right about now to be truthful about it because I get up early. And but Friday night in the Udy household is sometimes we go out to dinner, but sometimes we stay in and cook and then we watch some movies. But kind of it's like a family night to just hang out. Every now and again, I'll find myself hanging out with you guys. And then, you know, Saturday morning's a very difficult time for me. But for the most, like I'm a boring dude, right? Like I did a lot of partying from the ages of 15 all the way to 30. Like I got it all out of my system. So now it's just more of like, in, you know, reflecting on the week, thinking about what we're going to do for the weekend and just trying to get that quality time in while I can, because as he gets older, he's going to want less of it. And so I want to capture as much of it now and hopefully influence him so that he doesn't turn out to be a douchebag when he's older.
Well, hopefully, you know, Michael and I, we'll definitely help with that part. We'll make sure he stays on. Yeah. We won't teach him anything bad at all.
Yeah. Okay.
But you mentioned
a whiskey here.
You mentioned, you know, when we get together there, we often end up, you know, there's a lot of bottles that come into play. And so we end up drinking a bit, but, moving outside of that, moving into, you know, non-alcoholic drinks, what are your go-tos? Because obviously you can't drink all the time or you'd be dead already. So would I.
So it's terrible, man. Coffee and soda water. I love coffee. I love cappuccinos. So like if I have a bad day, I go get a cappuccino or a flat white. It's just my thing. Like if I can see the storm coming on the work horizon, I'm like, all right, today's a day for a cappuccino. But nice. But I love coffee. I love sparkling water. I don't really like. So it's weird because that is what I drink. But then I know you said non-alcohol, but one thing I actually drink that I enjoy that I don't consider to be alcohol related is very low ABV yellow beer. Even though it's technically alcohol, but it's just like so far away from what I do for a living.
It's like a PBR. Like, yeah. It's basically just beer flavored water.
It's at the end of the day. I used to be addicted to Coca-Colas. I had a hard time walking away from that. I tried to quit drinking Coca-Cola like 4 or 5 times and failed every time until I bet a buddy of mine $100 that I could go without Coca-Cola longer than he could go without beer. And we did this at a restaurant, and that asshole, the waiter walked up and the waitress walked up and said, you know, what do you guys have? And he looked at her and he just looks at me and he goes, oh, the Coke. Nice. It was one of those. But
that's amazing.
Yeah, but I know it's a boring answer, but really soda water and coffee are my jams. I like green tea a lot too.
It's not a boring answer. It's honestly, it's my answer too. My fridge is full of sparkling mineral water. So like Topo Chico and coffee. Like I bought an espresso machine. Yeah, coffee and water. Like I bought an espresso machine during the pandemic so that I could make my own flat whites and stuff at home, especially up here in the mountain.
And do you love it?
I absolutely love it. I love being able to make them myself.
No, you need to let me know what it is because we're thinking of getting one.
I got the Breville. It's fantastic. It's got the espresso grinder built in. It's amazing. I once a day, like towards kind of my afternoon, I'll just come downstairs because I work from home. So I'll come downstairs and I'll make one right there and get out my almond milk and get my little pitcher and fill it. And
you do the whole hit on the table.
I can't. My art looks more like it's very abstract. It looks more like a Jackson Pollock painting. I haven't dialed that part in yet. I'm working on it, but it's fun to make those, and I got even deeper into my coffee during this whole thing where I've got different ways to brew my French press versus my my clever dripper versus my pour over versus, so I've gotten kind of a fun rabbit hole to go down.
I'm with you 100%. Like the origin of the beans is determined by how the coffee is going to be made. So like if it's cappuccino, then it's like South American or Central American style coffee beans for me. And then if it's a pour over, I'd prefer to go over to like Africa where it's got higher acidity and more of those tart,
I use
raspberry flavors because I it better.
Brazilian beans for my espresso.
Yeah, it's perfect, right? Like just super savory and thick and,
yep,
and adds not just flavor but also like a texture to the whatever beverage you're making versus something that's just a little bit thinner and higher in acid. Like it's my jam.
I agree. And there's a great place. You're not too you're a little far from, but not too bad. It's called Toasted and Roasted down on Melrose. Mm-hmm. I was going there regularly because they roast their beans in house, like right as you walk in the door. Their giant roaster is right there. And they do them fresh and they deliver, they ship me 2 bags of beans a month up here on the mountain.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I was able to keep that and they just do a rotation. So sometimes it's African beans, sometimes it's from South America, sometimes it's a mix. Like it's great. I love it.
This Violet Bay is good, by the way. I drank the whole little doodah. Muscatel.
You're going to have to get me samples of that.
I will do. Once they come in the country, I will do. This is what they sent out to us initially for this is one of a couple sets they sent out to me initially when we were talking to them.
It's nice.
It's good. Yeah, man, but coffee's no joke. So it's and for those of you guys who don't know Joshua, I've never seen him in person without his mug full of coffee so he can reset his palate, which doubles as a blunt weapon. In case anyone attacks him, like it's a big honking, like it looks like a cop's mag light, but it's like his palate resetter that he could just beat you with if he wanted to.
You got to be prepared for everything.
Oh man, we'll get halfway through the evening on those nights, and I start to side eye it because I'm like, I want some fucking coffee. I should have brought some coffee. Dang nabbit.
Boy Scout always prepared. So transitioning out of liquids and into solids, what's the most memorable meal of your life?
All right, hold on. I got to look at what I wrote for this because that's a...
Oh!
I know what it is. Yeah, no, that's right because it was a recent one. Sorry. It was a recent one. That's right. See, but again, the questions are hard, right? Like how do you,
They should be hard. Yeah. This is how we get to explore Chris Udy.
Yeah.
Not the man who brings in whiskey, but the guy himself.
Yeah, so the most memorable one will be, it's weird. I guess I interpreted the question different. It's like less, because again, my memory is shot, so I don't really remember many meals, but there is one that is the most important for me, for sure. And that is my mom was in town, and you have to understand, my mom raised us as a single teacher, raising 3 kids in the southeastern part of the United States. So there wasn't a lot of, extra funds lying around to go do anything fancy ever. And she came to town and I totally took her out. And we happened to be at a place that had Wagyu steak. And I was like, Mom, do you want the Wagyu? And she's like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, we can get anything on here. Like, it was just kind of, it was just cool because, like, you know, my mom is my hero. And for me to be able to just say, get anything you want on the menu. Now, mind you, anyone that's watching, I definitely scanned that thing to make sure there wasn't like some crazy $7,000 wine on there or something bananas like that. But you know, like it's expensive, right? $150 for Wagyu or whatever it was not cheap. But for that experience and for my mom to just be able to like get what she wanted and then we paired it with a bunch of other stuff that we ended up not even being able to eat because it's all too rich and it's just too much and neither one of us eat that way. So it was like this kind of opulent, wasteful meal, but it was just a lot of leftovers, I guess, that we snacked on the next few days. But it was cool. And so like I'm very proud of that moment to be able to do that for her. And she's gonna come out again in a few weeks and I'm gonna do it again, but I'm gonna find somewhere else to take her. I'm gonna try to get
that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm gonna sneak into a Michelin restaurant or something and take her there.
But that's a perfect answer. You know, having being able to in a small way pay your mom back for everything she did for you as a kid, being a single mom, and now you can go out and treat her to like this opulent meal that, you know, you didn't even think of when you were kids. Like that's just fantastic. Like that's a really good memorable meal.
But I would also say, man, that like, you know, a very memorable meal for me as well would be when we used to be at the top of Far Bar eating hamburgers and fries and drinking really good whiskey.
That was awesome.
You know, you're sitting there like running out of fries and you're like, oh man, I'm hammered, but I want to drink more. Like those were great evenings as well. So it's hard. Your questions are great questions, but they are hard to give singular answers to because so many different things, meals for so many. Like another one would have been one of the first meals I ever ate with Sam. We were at a Russian restaurant, and there's 75 dishes on the table, and two bottles of vodka already gone, and a bunch of Baltica has been drank. And I just remember like it was blinis and borscht and everything else, and like towards the end of the meal, Sam just starts getting on to me because I haven't eaten any salad yet. He's like, Christopher, you have to eat your salad. It's going to keep you healthy. I'm like, Sam, I've eaten 7,000 calories. Salads, all I'm doing is making it worse. And he's like, you will eat your salad. And I had to eat my salad and then take a shot of vodka.
Oh my God. I can see Sam doing that. Oh my God. That's amazing.
And that's a very memorable meal as well.
See, and that's honestly the questions, the, like I actually ran these questions through several people before like landing on the 13, and I because there was there's probably been 50 questions that I've gone through to get down to the 13 that I'm going to be asking everybody, and part of it is because in my head I was always thinking I wanted to do this as a video podcast or audio, like we'll figure that out as we go. That's why I'm using this platform because it'll separate out the audio and I can pull it off and. But the reason for that is I wanted to have something that would be fine printed, but when we actually got to talk about it, you could have more than one answer. You could have more there. So
what you're saying is designed for people like me, right? Like the script exactly. is short so that I can read it, but then the audio is long so I can enjoy it. I dig it.
Exactly. 100%. That's what I was aiming for. So I'm hoping that we can totally dial that in. And now we're going to move away from food and beverages completely. And we're going to go back to the arts. But this time, this is totally in your wheelhouse. It's music. Yeah. So you got two openers, one headliner. What is your dream concert?
All right. This is a Queen with the original lineup, followed by James Brown of the 1960s when he's, you know, the big band and the dancers and everything. And then The Who closes it out. I guess The Who is, I've seen The Who play live a few times and they're awesome. Like I still That's love amazing. It. So, but yeah, like, you know, Freddie Mercury just rocking it out, and then James Brown coming behind him and laying down a bunch of soul and funk and just like making it work. And then The Who just playing like Quadrophenia in its entirety would be great.
That's amazing. I would love to go to that concert. Like that would be incredible. It's in my like magical musical time machine. Original Queen is definitely one of the bands I want to see.
Right? Like, you see the videos of them and you're like, that looks like it was an awesome thing to witness.
Yeah. So. What was the stadium concert they did in Brazil? Where it's just like, it's just this massive sea of humans is all you see.
Yeah, so about that, my dream concert would not be at a stadium, by the way. It would be at like, you know, a smaller auditorium where my old butt would have a place to sit and stand up and dance at the same time, like some assigned seating. I don't want to get caught in a wave of a bunch of sweaty dudes, like, you know, we're in a pandemic.
So, I want to take Queen and the Ramones and put them in CBGBs. And like, I want to see them like there.
CBGB, yeah, that would be great. That would be
Wanted me and a buddy of mine, we were broke punks in living in Wyoming. We were trying so hard to get together the money to go see any band whatsoever play in CBGBs. And then by the time we had gotten enough, like years later when we had the money to actually do it, CBGB's closed.
Yeah, well,
it's never ever got to see, but I would love to like see something like The Damned and Ramones in CBGB's.
The Damned would be a great show to see, I think.
Oh, yeah. That would be such a good band.
Buzzcocks
I want
would
to
be
see
great
them live.
Too. Like it would, you know.
Oh, well, I mean, think of that. Like Ramones headlining, Buzzcocks opening, Damned being the middle band.
That would be a fun show. That would be a lot of, you know, your neck would hurt the next day.
Yeah, it would be a lot of fun. I can't grow the hair out here anymore. It's all gone. But I'd put on a fake mohawk like I had back in college. I'll get a big blue mohawk just for that. Still got my leather jacket though, from that time. But and staying in the line of fantasy, if you had 30 days with absolutely nothing to do, unlimited budget, what would be your dream vacation or itinerary?
30 days.
30 days for Chris Udy to relax. You someone gives you an Amex Black card that you don't have to pay back and you just get to.
Yeah. So
Chris Udy relaxation journey, what would it be?
See, that's a tough one. I don't think I have a singular answer for it because I would love to just be able to spend 30 days in Japan and go from top to bottom and just hit every nook and cranny on the way. But in my life, I get to go to, well, pre-pandemic, I get to go to Japan a few times a year. So, but it's always in the south. But to just properly spend 30 days going up and down would be fantastic. Hit a bunch of onsens and just relax. I think would be great, but also I would love to spend 30 days like between Portugal and Spain and just drinking Madeira and wine and eating savory food and, you know, just chilling out, like sleeping half the day and staying up all night and then getting
that sounds
up and,
amazing.
You know, getting my walking in, but at the same time, like just gorging myself on a bunch of old Madeira for a week straight, like on a like porch, like overlooking hills. I would love it. I would love it.
You know, one of my favorite drinks I've ever had with you was that 100-year-old Madeira.
Yeah, that's a good
that point. That poured like syrup. That thing was like, that is one of my most memorable Chris Udy drinks is that 100-year-old Madeira. That thing was.
That's funny. That goes back to my
unreal.
Mom, right? Because she came out after Kaito was born and I opened it to celebrate his birth with her. So that she and I could share it together. And then I shared it.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yeah,
what did your mom think of it?
She thought it was great. She, you know, she doesn't. She thinks
that's a good answer.
Yeah.
It's good.
She's like, oh, this is fun.
Whenever I do tastings, people will. It's so funny because people are like, oh, you know, this is. I can't say things the way you do and blah, blah, blah. Like, I just. I think it's good. I like it. Like that is the perfect answer. Cause when I talk about something, I'm saying it's good. And then I just take 50, you know, I just take 1,000 words to say it's good instead of just saying it's good.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect answer. Just say it's good.
Yeah. She had more than
I need
pour.
To do more of that.
She liked it.
That's amazing. That's awesome.
I got one more of those bottles. I don't know when or if I'll ever open it, but. So many bottles.
Maybe when Kaito turns 21.
Yeah, that would be good because then I could share it with him. If he
hopefully,
cares, but I got a feeling he's not going to care. The one thing he has shown is that if Papa's into it, then Kaito is going to be into something else. Like he flexes that way. It's kind of great.
When you turn 21, there's that thing. Like I've always wished I could have had a beer with my dad at 21, yeah. But he doesn't drink, so that just never happened. So, but
can still have a beer with your dad. He just ain't gonna have one with you.
Oh, he's just gonna walk away. He's just like, that's not for me.
Just put it in your coffee mug, and then he
puts the totaler in teetotaler.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's the way families are, man.
It is. But we've made it to the end. So we've done 12 questions. We've got the 13th question. And this one, I know it's a little generic, but every time I listen to interviews of other people, I absolutely love this question because I love hearing what people have to offer from their perspective or their life. Because we're all different. We all have completely different backgrounds. We have different life experiences. We have different work. So, it's a generic question, but it's honestly one of my favorites that I love hearing from other people. And so, Chris Udy, to you, finally, the last question, what's the best piece of advice you've been given, whether life, career, whatever, what that you want to share with folks? So the best piece of advice you've been given, you want to share with everybody.
That's simple. Your children are going to grow fast. Don't miss it. Like, I'm in the midst of watching this happen in front of me right now. Like every time I blink, our son is bigger. He is evolving into his own man. Like he is changing from the little bitty baby that used to piss on me when he was like really tiny. And it's, and even though I get to see a lot of it, it still just happens so, so fast. I was looking at videos earlier today of, even just a year ago and how different he was than now. But it feels like it was so long ago. And the advice I would just say is like, when you have children or loved ones in general, like any loved one, whether it be brother, sister, mother, father, good friend, you know, partner, however it is, just don't miss it, right? Like make sure you invest the time because because once the time goes, it doesn't come back and it moves way quicker than you think the older you get.
That it does. Very wise words, very important words, something that I think a lot of us struggle. I myself struggle with that of all the, like I'll suddenly notice that, man, I haven't talked to one of my friends in like 3-4 months and I can't believe the time's just gone. And it like, how did that happen? And it bothers me. So I love that. And thank you for sharing it.
Yeah. The other one,
thank you for sharing this time with me.
The other one I always got though was don't lie to your accountant and don't lie to your doctor.
Okay. Yeah. Those are also very good.
No, thank you for having me on. I'm so honored. I get to be the first. Yeah.
You're the very first. And thank you. Thank you for we're getting through it. We'll figure it out. These will get better. And so now, before we close it out, the final plugging of all of this is that I have completely redone the Patreon setup. And if you want to help nominate people that you want to see in this interview series or just support the Whiskey Jug in general, feel free to come and join me over there. But other than that, I will have a link down in the description to Chris's written answers that he sent me, which I will fix the typos in to make you look good. And
thank you very much.
You're welcome. Give it a little tweak, a little edit, and I'll have the link down there. And then all the usual like, subscribe, bells, whatever. And yeah, thank you, my friend. It's been so good to connect with you over this. And I've learned actually a lot. I knew little bits and pieces of some of these questions before you sent back the answers. But I have a much clearer picture of Chris Udy the human. And I love it. You thank you for sharing all like, that with us.
You're like Philly cheesesteaks and street tacos in Japan? What the
That was actually my first thought was, that's weird. All right, let's talk about it. I'm looking forward to it. So, but thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. And yeah, thank you everyone who listened and make sure to support his Patreon. Cause as we just learned tonight, he ain't got change for his tires and it just snowed.
All right. We're going to end on that.
All right. Bye, take care. Bye-bye.